Keep It is brought to you by Masa. I try not to read nutrition labels. It's a whole bunch of gibberish for one thing, but for two, it's a bunch of long words and instinctively my brain wants to put them in a We Didn't Start the Fire like rap, and then I attempt to sing it, and that's bad for you and me. But have you ever looked at the nutritional label on a bag of chips? Odds are you found a chemical cocktail, seed oils, MSG, artificial dyes, vague natural flavors, and ingredients that sound more like a science experiment than a snack. Masa is part of the growing movement to bring back real food, the kind our grandparents ate before snacks were made in labs. Masa's chips contain just three ingredients: organic, nixtamalized corn, sea salt, and 100% grass-fed beef tallow. That's it. No seed oils, no mystery chemicals, just real food. These chips don't only avoid all the bad stuff, they taste incredible too. Snacking on Masa chips is nothing like eating regular chips. With Masa, you feel satisfied, light, and energetic with no crash, bloat, or gross, sluggish feeling afterwards. And because these chips are made with real food, they're more satiating, so you won't find yourself uncontrollably binging and still feeling hungry afterwards. I have an issue where I love tortilla chips, namely lime-tinged tortilla chips. As you may know, I want the phrase hint of lime to become a new euphemism for being gay. Did you meet that guy, you know, Marcel? He's got a hint of lime, that kind of vibe. If you love Masa, then you'll love Vandy Crisps. Vandy, Masa's sister company, makes delicious three-ingredient potato chips. My favorite flavor is French onion. I have a problem where I think that's the best chip flavor. And the reason is, I think it tends to linger on you more in a bad way. But with these, it feels like real food. That's what it feels like, real food. Eat real food. I feel like we have a similar vision, Masa and I. Ready to give Masa or Vandy a try? Use code KEEPIT for 25% off your first order at masachips.com or vandycrisps.com, or simply click the link in the video description or scan the QR code to claim this delicious offer. Don't feel like ordering online? Masa and Vandy are now available nationwide at your local Sprouts supermarket. Stop by and pick up a couple bags before they're gone. And we're back with an all-new episode of Keep It. I'm Louis Bertel, here in the, shall we say, upside down with our two fabulous co-hosts this week. Riri, do you love my extemporaneous stylings?
Oh my God, I love it. And it came so purely out of your spirit.
Oh, thank you.
I think that's what I love the most.
Also, that's all the information I have about the show Stranger Things. I've seen like three episodes altogether. This is Riri Cheney. Welcome back.
Hi. Yeah, no, you have two more things than I know. But I like people getting excited about a show that comes back every 3 years.
Right.
Are they on what schedule? Or is
it's
happening?
Like Winter Olympics-y. Yeah.
It's crazy what's happening in Atlanta.
Maybe people would watch television if we knew when television happens.
Say that.
Yes. And also, this is Guy Branum joining us once
Hello.
Again.
Hello. Good to be here.
I think you might be our most frequent guest host at this point. Over the years, if we added them all up.
Oh, that's very exciting.
Yeah.
Well, you two love data. You'll figure that out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have nothing else to talk about except this nonsense. But anyway, Stranger Things is back.
First part of the final season.
Yes.
And part A, part B of it all. But happy for everyone else who will get the second half come Christmas.
Right. And also the 80s were a fun decade. So I'm glad people are learning about that era, I guess.
Yeah. It's fun to have nostalgia for it. And remember back when we had like genre movies for young people that were good and interesting. Yeah.
Oh, God. It's been a long, long time, actually. Yes. Stop pretending we've been getting those recently. By the way, that Kate Bush song is still going back up the charts. Is that part of, like, people like the show so much, like, the memory of running up that hill? Just, like, they're like, I have to re-download that because, by the way, I lost the download.
I think that, stream, honey. But I also think,
iTunes, yes.
iTunes, on your iPad. I do think that some people are mentally just still running up the hill.
Yeah, sure.
And also, I think that is kind of the best part of a show that is like tapping into moments of pop culture nostalgia is like, yeah, let's bring it back. Let's have these women who were at home minding their business now get to afford their grandchildren's tuition right. off of these streams.
No,
I think that's great.
I hope Kate Bush, wherever she lives, between the gargoyles in which she lives,
exactly.
is enjoying these streams.
There was a really great like NPR interview with one of the women from Slater Kinney, I believe, basically mm-hmm. talking about like a life where if we're touring, this is my income. But if we're not touring, we don't make enough money off of that. And just being reminded that so many of these recording artists, a little moment like this, like whatever negotiations had to happen for Taylor Swift to give a writing credit to the George Michael estate.
Exactly.
I'm just happy for it.
No, exactly. No, well, I feel the same way.
We also
way.
Have Sophie Ellis Baxter, the from when the boy drank the bathtub water.
Saltburn, yes.
Thank you. She's on, she has been to LA twice.
Sophie is rebuilding. She has been in LA twice in 10 months,
fully touring. It's amazing.
Sophie Ellis Baxter, understanding she is our mediumist diva, that yes. she's got 3.5 good songs and let's work them.
And baby,
is magnificent.
I went to one of the concerts. I was in there waiting to shake it to the one lyric I knew and I had a great time.
Is she the kind of person who you go see the concert and she has the one song, couple songs we know,
yes.
but then she's like, and here's It's Raining Men?
I think she did a cover, but it was a lot of like, I totally understand why you're here. I will be standing still most of the time, but I'm,
I'm enjoying
good.
My 40s.
Exactly, but yeah. I look good, and that's all you guys really need.
Okay, we're talking about a former, I believe, winner of Strictly Come Dancing, okay. so does know how to move when properly instructed. Also, it's unfair.
Singer when, who moves?
Yes.
Okay.
No, but she understands she's bad, but also, during the pandemic, she famously did like kitchen disco, where her husband is a guitarist for a different band. They have like 8 redheaded children, all boys, and she would just put on a sparkly outfit that she had and sing covers in her kitchen and dance with her 3-year-old, and I was in for it. So, I mean, I've been there the whole time, so the Saltburn magic happening was very exciting.
Unfortunately, you've also brought up the title Strictly Come Dancing, which is so a mindfuck every time it
yes.
is said. What? Like, it's based on Strictly Ballroom?
And the kink song Come Dancing.
So we just put them together?
Oh, it
makes, no, England. It's so baffling. But also, in addition to the thrill we all have for Stranger Things coming back, it's got me nostalgic over the great Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
First of all, she is very important just as somebody who talks about the Criterion Closet.
Yeah.
When
yes.
she's in there and like obsessed with movies, like people who are avid about acting, as in watching actors and old movies, like we need those people. We need the Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
It does. It seems to be truly one of her special interests to stay at home and read Russian subtitles.
Yeah.
And you do need that. And for people who aren't aware of her game, it's nice that like she goes through these press cycles and reveals like she's connected to art from centuries past. I think
yes.
that's really cool. And she's a little spooky and we need
yes.
that.
Yes.
I know, guys. Okay.
Her Winona-ness is genuine.
It's right. genuine. She,
yes.
But she got knocked upside down, right side up by this industry and she's still here. And so, yeah, like watch Heathers, have a good time and know that girl is still in there.
Well, that journey yeah. of being somebody who pushed back so hard when she was a teen star mm-hmm. and got knocked down so many times and like came back with a spookiness and a spirituality and an otherworldliness, mm-hmm. it makes you understand it and connects me more to those ladies who were weird in their 50s and 60s when I was young and I was like, didn't know where it came from.
Yes. Yeah, she also looks spectacular.
Yes.
Yeah, she looks great.
I feel like Guy and I are going to have the same
oh, wow.
Winona Ryder favorite movie. But I'm going to start with Riri in that mm-hmm. case because I feel like yours won't be the same.
No, and it's really okay. I really like her in Mr.
Deeds. I thought you were going to say Mr. Deeds. I literally was like, she's not going to start me on Mr. Deeds this morning.
I love Mr.
What
Deeds.
What a bonkers take. But
okay,
keep going.
So, okay, I really love Mr. Deeds. I am a fan of Adam Sandler. Like,
even like that.
Like, I don't know.
I'm going to get you some
well,
vitamins.
Because I like also when he refers to as himself as Sandman and the fact that his body was a little secret crazy. He had a yeah. sneaky body at the time. But Winona Ryder in that movie, like, the arc of it, it takes a while to reveal that she's also mentally ill, like this town full yeah. of like Steve Buscemi with one eye going different way and John Turturro as the butler, but also the heir to the throne. But Winona is like trying to hold the crazy in so much. She's like, I'm just the hot girl in the film until they let her free. And I love it. And yeah, I was in middle school and sometimes that shit sticks.
Okay, yeah. but no, the way you describe it, there's like some Silver Linings Playbook going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah. There's
here.
A lot of strange, like Welcome to the Strange, Strange Town.
But
yeah.
I also think in like the man-centric comedy movie, mm-hmm. whether you are treating the woman as interchangeable, that Tia Leone can simply be lifted out of Bad Boys and no one's going to notice, or whether you are understanding that this person is part of the magic and mm-hmm. part of the crazy, and if you make space for a Linda Fiorentino in Men in Black,
yes.
that makes a different
oh,
and better movie.
Yeah, mm. yeah. Especially when it's like Adam Sandler and all of them seem to be aware of like, oh, we got this girl we always had a crush on, but she can toe-to-toe.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that mm-hmm. isn't always where we're placing our feminine spaces
yes.
anymore.
Now, am I right? What's your favorite Winona Ryder movie?
In the prep materials, it was Role. So I came specifically with Charlotte Flax from Mermaids.
Oh my God. Oh, interesting. Oh, no, yes. not what I expected.
Okay. Yeah. I just think she played so many quirky and interesting teenagers at that time who like didn't fit into the world around them. And like, were you assuming I would say Lydia Deetz?
No, I was going to say Little Women, which I love her in.
I do love Little Women, but you also need to remember, I'm also a How to Make an American Quilt guy.
Oh, wow. That's a real special.
You gotta remember.
It's a homosexual of a certain caliber, if you're paying attention.
But like, Mermaids is such a weird movie.
Yeah.
Everyone in it is a heavy hitter. And it was just...
And the darkest of hair.
The darkest of hair.
So glamorous,
but,
though.
Like, so, like... It's such a grounded, quirky performance. Like, it doesn't have ghosts. They're having to make all of the ghosts inside. And, like, I really love that movie, and I really love what she brings to the craziness of that character, but also the relationships with Cher and Christina Ricci, who are also, you know, too much.
We could have a Cher Film Festival, by the way, and we should, because she's not in that many movies, and most of them hit.
Yes.
You know, like, even, like, Suspect she's good in, which is, I think, a lower tier Cher movie.
My favorite Thanksgiving movie, Burlesque, only because it came out over Thanksgiving. It's my favorite movie. I love
it. What, remember Kristen Bell in that movie? And she's like, I'm a drunk driver.
She's Kristen Bell in that movie in I want to say a Shake and Go, pre-Amazon Shake and Go.
Yeah.
But it's like, she's brunette, she's evil.
Right.
And Cher's like, girl, what's your name? Like, the whole thing is so amazing. Also, we learned about air rights and, you know, the legality of that.
I wonder how many drafts in before they got to air rights as a way to solve that movie.
It was like, guys, what's the thing? What is, how is Christina Aguilera's character have the highest level of intelligence? It's air rights from Eric Dane, like, known hottie? It's an amazing film. Robin Anton, thank you for that.
Yes. So Little Women. I mean, Little the thing Women. That shocked me about Winona Ryder is when she emerged on the scene, as you just said, she was like the definitive Gen X teenager, like the actual angst. It's shocking she wasn't in the background in the Smells Like Teen Spirit video, for example, or in every Gen X movie. It's surprising she wasn't the star of the movie Pump Up the Volume, for example. But
Samantha Mathis did good work.
I would say she was fine. I would say Kristen Slater, amazing in that movie.
I feel so young and free right now. But she's the heart of Little Women.
She's so weirdly appropriate in a period piece. Yeah. She showed us that in The Age of Innocence first, for which she was nominated for an Oscar. And then in this movie, which I think is the best Little Women. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I kind of can't explain why. It's just that all the actresses give it kind of a light touch. And it has a sort of holiday movie spirit, even though it's about the strong wills of these characters. And I also love Christian Bale in that movie.
Yeah.
So I'm shocked to say that I wish Winona Ryder did more period work.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean,
she's also in Great Balls of Fire around that time. That's sort of period.
She does appear in a hoop skirt a couple times.
Yeah.
But there is something so specific of like, her face was so contemporary for the 80s.
Yeah.
But also there is a certain white facial architecture that can work in many different centuries. And she does have it.
It's the gossamer skin.
Exactly.
Well, it's that also, translates.
It is hard for a short hair American to go period.
Yes.
You know? But Joe March is like requiring that little bit of soft butch energy. That she
because she likes to write.
Yes.
You can't.
That's the first sign.
To be queer is to write. To have a journal?
Imagine yourself a pirate.
Okay, well, I'm glad we uncovered all that.
Oh, wow.
This episode, we're going to get into some even, I'll say, sadder period garb with the movie Hamnet, the new Chloe Zhao movie starring Paul Mescal and Jesse Buckley, and some children, I hope we'll discuss. And then additionally, less sinister, or more sinister in a different way, you heard of this show, Heated Rivalry?
I sure have.
Guys, I have bad news. It is a double entendre. There are these hockey players that there's a bit of a rivalry professionally, but then they involve gay sex, which is heated.
Do you think that could possibly warm up the ice, the notoriously cold place where hockey takes place?
We will have to ask Danielle Steele, because the title Heated Rivalry is so 80s trash book. I'm obsessed with it.
I will be watching every minute of the show.
Yeah, so there's two episodes up now. It comes from a foreign planet called Canada. We'll discuss that too. And then eventually, get this, we're going to switch up the last segment of the episode. Normally, that's the Keep It segment, but we're going to do something new and a bit more extemporaneous. Mm. So get your Improv Olympic level one credibility out.
Oh, God.
And we'll be right back with more Keep It. Keep It is brought to you by Armor Colostrum. In a world that's constantly changing, your health shouldn't be up for debate. From the latest wellness trends to the chaos of modern culture, we're always questioning what's real and what's just noise. But one thing is certain, your body wasn't designed for all the stress, blue light, processed foods, and environmental threats of today's world. Armour colostrum is nature's original superfood. Colostrum is packed with over 400 bioactive nutrients that work at the cellular level to fortify gut health, strengthen immune health, fuel performance, and more, because no matter where you stand on the latest hot topic, feeling your best is never up for discussion. Armour colostrum is the easiest part of my day. I mix it into a little water. It's the first thing I drink right before I do anything with my life, before I even get in the shower, before I take my drug cocktail that you can't know anything about. We've worked out a special offer for our audience. Receive 30% off your first subscription order. Go to armra.com/keepit or enter keep it to get 30% off your first subscription order. That's armra.com/keepit.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Chloe Zhao's Hamnet premiered last week. She directed and co-wrote the film adaptation of Maggie O'Farrell's novel, which stars Jesse Buckley and Paul Mescal as Agnes and William Shakespeare. Ah, him. Grieving the loss of their son, the film is already a top awards contender, but we'll be the judge of that, along with Zhao's chances for best director in this season's awards race. Who wept?
I weep at almost anything, but God knows I wept.
You did. Okay, yes. Yeah. I did not weep, but explain what got to you the most in this movie.
I think it was those first moments when I realized that the story wasn't going to go to London that much, and that it was going to be Agnes's story, and that it was about building a heart for the other half of this relationship, and not a heart that was, like, explicitly adversarial. Mm. That this, like, when I realized that this was going to be a real human story that wasn't too proud of itself for being, look at me, I'm imagining what the woman's interior life was like, but just, like, a real human story, and that there would be Shakespeare-sized magic and really, really, like, delightful and witty homage to the theatricality of the stuff that he did without being, I hate a trite, and this happened in real life, and then they put it into the play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't being tritely one-to-one about that. It was a real, organic story that then gets heart-wrenching, but I don't know that the heart-wrenching parts were the things that made me cry as much as just realizing, oh, I love this character.
So Jesse Buckley in this movie gets into a relationship with William Shakespeare. They have a bunch of kids rather quickly. And then his writing career, which, as you know, somewhat took off, starts to tear him away from her. He has to go to London all the time. And then he doesn't get back fast enough when one of the kids is in a life or death situation. One of the kids dies unexpectedly. And then eventually he sort of solves this spiritually by writing his name into the play Hamlet.
Like, what to me was, like, really striking and surprising was that it wasn't he's always off in London having his interesting life. That, like, Agnes is the person who sends him off to London. She understands that his soul needs this, and he's only going to be a good partner to her if he has that. And I just thought it was, like, you know, it was an evolution of us being able to write Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus style. Like, we approach things differently, but, like, really having their worldviews come to a head when the sun dies and she's like, how can you not be here? Mm. Like, it felt real and grounded.
What did you think?
I mean, I think that what I really enjoyed about Agnes, and mostly Jesse Buckley's performance, is that when you meet her, her life is already so full.
Yes.
So she is, and it's so important to mention, a force witch. She is a, she is a
woman. Oh, she immediately has a hawk on
her.
Yeah,
she has a hawk and a glove, and you're like, oh, girl, I get it.
Yeah.
But she has this entire interior and spiritual life that isn't connected to being dicked down by Paul Mescal, and Lord knows I wish that would change my spiritual life. And so when she finds this artistic person, she is aware of who she chose.
Yes.
And it's okay to release them. It's okay. Yes, I am pregnant. Yes, I am taking care of our oldest daughter, Susanna, but babe, go. And I think that because of the facts we have around the very few facts we have around the original couple, a lot of people have made a lot of assumptions about what that relationship must have been. Her being older than him.
Yeah.
He was wearing capris in the city. so there's a lot of judgment of like, oh, maybe she was resentful back in Stratford. And like you said, I think that that's the most tugging part for me. It's like she's okay and she's built this life. And part of that is knowing that she can care for her children and she will do anything. And medically, she couldn't. Yeah. And that's where they had come into conflict. And no, she can no longer hold space for him holding space for his genius.
Yeah.
And it's really, I mean, it starts haunting and it stays haunting the whole time. You know kind of what the timbre of the piece is from the beginning.
I would almost say that was a flaw for me. Yeah, whereas like her character, as you said, has these like interesting qualities or whatever. But in a way, the movie is static in a way where she can only be devastated for the movie to get where it needs to go. So I was sort of waiting for her to get to a place where she is wrenching on screen. And you do get that, of course.
I just thought that there was so much happiness and engagement and love of life from Agnes's character and from Jesse Buckley's performance that I didn't feel this sort of like we're destined towards devastation. Oh. There was like Almodovar level like magic that was going on, and it felt like such a beautiful counterbalance to, we always talk about like Shakespeare's being rooted in classical stuff and he was Latin tutor and all of that, and just being like, ah, yeah, but this is where the like, you know, nature-y shit from Timon of Athens and everything like that comes from. It just felt like such good grounded magic that I was really there for it.
And let's be clear, visually, the movie is stunning from the jump. The minute you like see the first frame of this movie, the greenery of this
film. So many ferns.
It's the tapestry of moss. You know, we get it.
Yeah, it's the mossiest movie of all time.
It's the mossiest movie we've ever had. And guy, I totally hear you in terms of like the roots and the grounding of like where a lot of pleasure and art we've gotten, we can see that sprinkled in. But there, for me, there was an overcast above the entire thing from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And it's not just because it starts with a spooky tree cave that we're like, what is beyond that veil?
Yeah.
But the veil is, I felt, always ever present. And that felt purposeful. Because if you, even if you had a light Google of what's going on, or if you have awareness of the name, you know what's going to drop on you. But it's the living in between that is beautiful, and you flirt with the boy and you play swords with your son and you have all of that. But I was like holding my tits for an hour because I knew it was coming. And that, I don't know if that's like a self-generated had not taken my Lexapro issue or if it was, which I think was truthful, that the auteur decided like you can witness this joy in process and know that it is temporary.
Also, I want to say like, there's nothing technically wrong with there being a foreboding quality to it. But at the same time, it was foreboding.
It was foreboding.
I think the fact that everyone's approach was let's make this work in the best way possible, that there wasn't that sort of interpersonal conflict, made me a little more comfortable with the fact that our conflict was going to be existential.
Yeah.
And that was going to run before the interpersonal stuff. Though I do have to say, let's talk about Emily Watson.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, okay, yes,
guys, I did not know that Emily Watson was going to be in this movie. I know some of you younger people know her from the hit show Chernobyl. But a lot of us know her from, at one point, she broke the waves in a Lars von Trier movie. She was a cellist in Hillary and Jackie. And sometimes when you're gay, you get to say the words Jacqueline Dupre and you like it.
She's also in the Dune prequel right now for HBO Max. Just really ruining people's lives with her mind.
And also, you know this, Mr. Deeds, she was in Punch Drunk Love.
Yes. she is a British woman of esteem.
Yes.
And she arrived holding her rosary and I knew it was about to go down.
The thing is but watching somebody who comes from Lars von Trier, who is kooky, weird lady, having her show up as British woman, lady of esteem, it is like, that's not a dame, but like seeing her do dame work, very exciting. Yeah. And also having her come in as a goddamn wrecking ball to distract us a little bit during the beginning of the second act from this existential dread. And then watching her coming to the point where we all need to make it work was really, really lovely. There was such temptation for this movie to like make her a bad guy because she wouldn't let Agnes go to the woods to have her baby and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry. She was suspicious of the witch. Yes. And okay, historically, those are the ladies that will get me drowned. I'm not trying to be on her side. But there is some, what you're saying, you're like, it was strange to see her in that sort of Elizabethan, heavy material telling him, like, oh, no, she's going to steal your soul from, the Christianity that we raised in.
Yes.
And an hour later, of course that woman has been touched by this sort of pain, and slowly derobing that from her. And also her being okay that her son is a playwright. That was like, goddamn, that took a lot of parents a lot of time.
Also, just Emily Watson, though, has one of these faces where every emotion registers on it. Like, the movie stops around this woman. I'm trying to, like, someone like Juliette Binoche is a little bit similar, where it's like the interiority is so strong. It's like these people are their own movie when they're on screen.
At the table, when they're sitting at the table having, like, one of the first big conversations, Chloe Zhao just gives you a screen full of Emily Watson's face. And it's like, that's all we want, is this woman wearing clothes that are architecture, looking like a goddamn recusant Catholic cathedral.
Ooh. But again, if it was a different director, you would stay on, you know, Paul and his father, because they have issues. They're glove makers, but they have issues. But it's no, it's like, who is witnessing that and trying to maintain some sort of peace where there is none?
The moment I fell in love with this movie was in the church where they get married, when I realized, oh, it's not about him. I had assumed we were going into a movie about Shakespeare. Yeah. And it's like, no, this is about the other person in this relationship. And it was really when I fell in love.
Well, it's an interesting take on Shakespeare also, because one, nobody has ever accused Shakespeare of being hot. So already, like, you're putting me in another headspace. But secondly, like, he is this determined writer. He's also, if I'm reading his characterization correctly, spectrum-y? Like, kind of, like, circling her and, like, touching her in a strange way. Yeah. Like,
he mentions that he's like, I have trouble communicating with people if I'm not on the page, which is like, well, we know some people like that.
That's true. That's what text threads are for.
That is where they get their feelings out. But yeah, there is a bit of the women that maintain these men, but then he can go.
Yeah.
And she's going to maintain their life. And yes, some of it is dealing with who he leaves in the wake, which are these kids who are so fed by his presence, but then it goes away for, I'm guessing, 8 to 9 months a year.
Yeah.
But Jessie Buckley, speaking of everything flickering over someone's face, she has this ability to feel austere, have a mask on, but you can still see the, like, pain flicker behind it.
Yeah.
Even before it gets to the grieving of it, she is someone holding it together. And it's like, I know I have to, these are the steps I need to do to be a wife and be the woman I want to be, who was not raised by the woman I wanted to be raised by. It is very kind. I knew she was going to keen when she started grieving. And and when you know a keenin's coming.
It reminded me a little bit of The Fablemans, just in telling a story about how well-intentioned good people can hurt each other. Mm. Because I really was surprised that it let both of them be very good parents to those children. Mm-hmm. I was surprised, and I was also, look, there are these attempts to be clever and charming with your integration of Shakespeare into your play on Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And things like the cross-dressing between the twins, the bed trick where the person who gets confused by the bed trick is deaf. Like, it really felt so smart and well-calculated and well-put-together and not overdone that I was just in love with the texture of this thing so much.
And you have to be. I am a dialogue, talk me down type of girl, as evidenced by me speaking into this microphone. But the layering and the texture and just the fibers that have stuck on us from his work, whether he wrote it all himself, have stuck on us in his work that they have sent into the ether through this film. That was fun. That is, like, the nerd part of me to be like, oh no, the kid's talking to death. Like,
speaking of integrating Shakespeare, though, what did you think when he, this is the thing that happens in movies about writers. I immediately thought of the Dorothy Parker movie, Mrs. Parker in the Vicious Circle with Jennifer Jason Leigh. Now, this is different because she allegedly came up with some of this stuff in conversation, like some of her most famous lines. But when Shakespeare in peril starts reciting "to be or not to be" to himself, we love it?
It made me mad. It made me mad because that's not how inspiration happens. When he said "just to be or not to be," I was like, that's enough. But then he goes into
the whole thing. He's note perfect.
And the thing, it pissed me off. I think the best representation we have of the creative process is the Mike Leigh film, Topsy Turvy.
Oh, sure. Gilbert and Sullivan movie.
A sword falls on W.S. Gilbert's head, and he's just like, what if a little guy had a big sword? And, like, the rest of the movie is putting everything else in there. And, like, if he just had the moment of, like, oh, wow, we're spending this whole life deciding whether we should live or die, that's fine. when it's the whole fully formed soliloquy, I'm gonna walk away.
But he's in rehearsal. I'm on Will's side. Sometimes you have to hear the speech to know if the speech works, and sometimes you gotta be on the bridge. But, you gotta about to be jumping to see if it works.
We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Katharine Hepburn won her first Oscar for a movie where they just slide in her doing Shakespearean monologues since she's an actress, and she does them really well. So I kind of felt like it was a gambit for Paul Mescal.
No, they wanted
Mescal,
to give Paul the scene. A way. I totally understand.
Not that it was badly done.
No, you want to see that boy with his little earring during the scene. I do understand it, but I did feel like because we had kind of shifted more into his perspective in that part, in the latter end of the movie that we didn't have going forward, I did want to see how he is processing that as he goes forward. I get it. It's a little, he's on a bog. He might jump. But there is... That's how he worked. That's how the only way he's going to see his way through this.
Yeah.
And I think that that was a fair choice. A long cut, but a fair choice.
First of all, when we got the little scene of her getting to his little apartment in London and just be like, oh, I thought it would be fancier than
were
this.
Were you waiting for Gwyneth Paltrow to show up? Yeah.
Well, by the way, though, it's relevant to bring up that movie because the end of this movie is a toast to how Shakespeare was performed in those days, which is the most pleasurable part of Shakespeare in Love. And you see... Jesse Buckley watching this performance and initially offended that he's invoking the name of their dead child before turning around. And yes, she doesn't understand the theater and how to behave at
She's not from the city.
Yes.
Yes, I loved that.
But also it was like kind of comedy.
Yes.
You're, like if you had never seen theater before and just wandered into it, would you be like, shut up!
It's like, why is everybody quiet?
Yeah.
I got things to say. No, that's like, but also because this is a much more naturalistic, the hinges are not glistening, you know, Colin Firth isn't going to show up version of it, the globe feeling so intimate and feeling so real. And we just have a backdrop and we have six players on screen. It is possible to reach out and touch
them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love anything where we play with the audience getting to come back at the thing that they have been watching. So her reaching out, so good. But also, I need to talk about the nail beds within this film.
I was thinking the same thing. The makeup artists were focused on those nail beds.
Like, these are the hands of people who live...
Who work.
Who live and work.
Yeah.
Like, Shakespeare's middle finger is always ink-stained. Everybody's hands are dirty. Like,
the little kids' hands, it's like they put... Like, because their mother's a gardener, they're always a little dirty. But I definitely imagine them in the trailer getting that done.
Yes.
Like, and I think that that's my mental illness. And I was like, some lovely lady named Letitia was doing that outside London.
But she has a dramaturgy degree.
I know. Yes. I know.
I think the look of the movie is actually the most triumphant part of
it.
You know, like it didn't feel 2025 in any way. And by the way, doesn't remind me of anything else Chloe Zhao has done.
Well, Chloe Zhao, a woman who loves a long vista.
She loves a vista.
Making a movie this talking and this much about language made me really excited.
Yeah.
I mean, the other truly triumphant and successful thing about it is Jesse Buckley's performance. Yeah. And I really feel like I question whether another woman is going to be given a vehicle that will give her the opportunity to make a splash in the best actress race the way that Jesse Buckley has really staked out some territory.
Yeah, I mean, who would even be her main competition at this point? Cynthia?
No,
I mean, it's like, she was fine. Yeah.
Because, like, and respectfully, I think that for me, For Good didn't feel so potent in the same way that, like...
The first half of that story is better.
Yeah. And so it's like, I love... times when women win best actress or best supporting for singing a song.
Yes.
It's one of my favorite categories of things. Yes. I'm not sure that's going to happen right now. And like what you're saying, it's like Jesse had so much meat to act through that I don't see you watching any of the other beautiful performances that we had and feeling like, oh, I just got stabbed in the tit.
Yes. Well, and I think like a very interesting heartfelt performance, like If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, in a smaller film that isn't directed by Chloe Zhao, that isn't going to be nominated for
it's
Best
not
Picture.
It's not going to get the eyes on it.
Yeah.
It's like, I guess, you know, like the chase of it all, again, to speak to category fraud, I don't think that's really going to work out, but I think she's does something.
Oh, Chase Infinity, Infinity and One Battle After Another.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who else do we have? Sentimental Value.
Oh, yeah. But Renata. Whose moment will come?
Will come. Probably not, but again, year. I think it's like, that's also an interesting situation of like subtlety and direction in space, but doesn't allow for that scene, that feeling of that scene.
Also, let me say, as an older person, it is important to give people their Oscar in the year when they should be getting their Oscar.
I know. No, I'm saying about Paul Mescal this year, if he won it, it would be too early.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, we do give to men later, but I just think not giving it to Tom Cruise for Magnolia was a collective communal mistake that we've been paying for years.
No, by the way, when we finally did give it to Brad Pitt and it was in supporting, it was like correct.
Yes. Of course.
You know?
Like, George Clooney, this is what we do. And Brad Pitt is not going to direct something when he's 67 that will win him a Best
not
Director
that we
Oscar.
Don't no. see.
Not true.
Not anything. Nothing he's going to say around then is going to be good for us.
No. Oh, yeah, no. His viewpoint is going to improve.
Yeah, exactly. But I think F2 will be great.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, good Lord. No, Chloe Zhao has, of course, won the Best Director Oscar mm-hmm. before. But I mean, this year is so all
yeah,
about Paul Thomas
think,
Anderson.
I
can't imagine
to.
There's a path forward for anybody else.
The hard part, and she set herself up because Nomadland had a similar attention to the sands of time.
Yes.
As it like flows through the air and the pollen and my headphones fall off. Yeah. I do think that a lot of people who are not gonna look specifically enough to see what Chloe is doing differently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah, they're just like period piece
yeah.
that looks good.
And they're like, oh, moss.
Yeah.
Over there it was dirt. And like I think that would be unfair, but I think that it is something that we should be aware of. Whereas I think Paul Thomas Anderson, for better or for worse, I can still keep thinking about that movie. So I think he's probably going to get it.
Oh, God, do I wish Tiana had one more scene. I just want her to clear that category. And now this other little girl, Ariana's going to take it.
Look, I would have liked one battle after another if, like, two more times women had talked to each other.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, again, we talked before no. about how no. Regina Hall certainly signed on for more than what we got from
yes.
her.
I do think that head nun had a monologue that I would like to see the cut of.
Yes.
But yeah, no, I totally
instead, we got cars.
Well, they're chasing. They're chasing the uphill daddy. But I do feel like they're... I feel with everything with the Oscars, it's like, where are we as a society and like, what do we want to like applaud?
Uh-huh.
And I think in terms of when it comes to Hamnet, yeah, there is this sort of, it's a maternal piece. We love mommy. I think we're in a daddy era right now.
Mm.
And I think the idea of like something that is responsive and a little violent and chaotic feels of the moment right now as we see as the world burns.
Yeah, I think unfortunately people watch a movie like One Battle After Another and their response to that kind of movie is the movies are back.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they see a movie like this and think, oh, what a good period piece.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even if you think of like Sinners, which at this point, how many years have I lived since Sinners came
right.
out?
By the way, at the Gothams, we gave the Supporting Performance Award to Wunmi Musaku, mm-hmm. who is fabulous in Sinners.
I mean, talk about an apothecary with a good old body.
Like, yes.
She makes the tea, the body was tea, the acting was tea. Oh, I loved her. She's in Loki, and she was fabulous in Lovecraft Country, and played a... If you want to watch a supercut that really will fuck with your mind, her performance as a woman able to change her body and her race in that show, a show that I wish had more time. She is so good and so hot and British. And like, bring it back. Let's have that.
I feel like the only way this Oscar season will get actually fascinating is if Sinners has a big run-up to the Oscars.
They're already like... They have a plan because I've gotten a couple black people. You want to come out and have a meeting about this movie? So I think that they are trying to push and they're going to be everywhere the next couple of months. But I just feel like if it had not been May, if it had.
I mean, it's so long ago.
Like, it is the difficulty of putting something like that out to be able to make money
mm-hmm.
because, of course, it has to be able to make money and have a bunch of articles about how it's not making enough money. Even though it's making money.
So much more money than everything else.
Yes. Yeah. But like, it's the last time I was at the movies and I was transported to a place I have not been and want to be in.
I was
like,
listening to the blues and jazz after.
Yes.
That was crazy.
I was just like, oh my God, we never go to this world. Like, mm-hmm. these are rich and interesting lives, and this is such a fun take on it.
And it was like four different genres and became yes. different ones at different moments. And also, by the way, it feels like Delroy Lindo has a nomination in him coming up at some point.
He's
Why not this year?
Great, great choices.
You know,
so I think, yeah, but that's one of those where I'm like, the business of it, they had to place it there for it to have had the chance that it had
yeah.
and
yeah.
to be re-released. Sinners had a re-release already this year.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that Ryan gets, you know, a little bit of applause for that because he made a really beautiful movie.
Anyway, so we love him.
We
it
like
turns
him.
Out we love it. We'll be right back after this with an equally esteemable drama. Heated rivalry. But first, some quick housekeeping. Holiday season is basically here, which means we're all one burnt appetizer away from calling Ina Garten for help. Good news, Aaron and Alyssa already did. They're talking with the Barefoot Contessa host about everything, her early days with her husband, her time in the White House, and the secrets to hosting without spiraling. New Hysteria episode drops tomorrow. Subscribe so you never miss an episode. Okay, we'll be right back with more Keep It. Keep It is brought to you by Helix. Well, winter is coming, and in LA, you know that means nothing. But still, I am preparing my home in a number of ways. I have to watch all my favorite holiday films, and they'll just play on repeat, whether I'm in the house or not. They just keep playing, and I walk in, and oh, The Dead starring Angelica Houston is playing. I'll just watch the rest of this. Otherwise, what I do is buy fresh new sheets and enjoy my Helix mattress. Helix is the most awarded mattress brand tested and reviewed by experts like Forbes and Wired. Helix offers a variety of mattresses designed to fit your sleep needs. How will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? Take the Helix Sleep Quiz. It matches you with the perfect mattress based on your personal preferences, making it easy to find a mattress that fits your sleep needs. Helix delivers your mattress right to your door with free shipping in the U.S., and you can rest easy with seamless returns and exchanges. The Happy with Helix Guarantee offers a risk-free, customer-first experience designed to ensure you're completely satisfied with your new mattress. They even offer a 120-night sleep trial and limited lifetime warranty. Go to helixsleep.com/keepit for 27% off site-wide. Exclusive for listeners of Keep It, that's helixsleep.com/keepit for 27% off site-wide. Exclusive for listeners of Keep It. Make sure you enter our show name into the post-purchase survey so they know we sent you. helixsleep.com/keepit.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Now, if you're a gay person with social media, you've seen the discourse about HBO Max's heated rivalry, a sultry sports romance drama about two hockey players slapping sticks in between hard-fought games. I believe a straight man wrote this copy. On the ice. Guy and Riri, let's discuss whether this Canadian import deserves to be raised to the rafters of our horny TV Hall of Fame.
It is not about slapping sticks. It is quite explicitly about getting that puck into that hole.
Yes, okay, oh, that's yeah. True. Like, thank you, representation. Correct. Yes. And icing. I'm moving on.
So I love to take a quick nap. I love when I wake up and the algorithm has changed. And when I woke up on Friday, I just kept seeing some just gorgeous butts. I couldn't figure out what was going on. And it was heated rivalry.
Riri, as you do so frequently, you've gotten to the heart of the issue so quickly. Okay, I was never going to watch this thing. Yes. I have a generalized fear about our world of gay romance that is written by heterosexual women.
Oh, sure. Like, yeah. Well, they're too powerful.
I'm very skeptical of it. And I knew nothing about this show. I do love that now what Netflix and HBO are for is letting us watch Starz original series or original Canadian content.
Yes, we're acquiring.
In a forum that is respectable. But to your point, when I saw that both of the men had hockey asses, mm-hmm. that they had big asses, not in the way of gay big asses, mm-hmm. but in the way of hockey, I was like, this show, and I started doing my light Googling.
Yeah.
And realizing that the showrunner is Jacob Tierney, the co-creator of Letterkenny, an astoundingly mm-hmm. funny, good show.
Great show.
And Shorzy, a show that is about hockey, like, made me understand, and also a gay guy, like, mm-hmm. why this show is hot, why this show is good, like, why it doesn't have the soapiness that I don't like from those sexy shows. This is a show that's like, get into the fucking and I think we're not murdering anyone.
But we're using show really in a wild way. This is we are watching vignettes of ass. And
yes.
I think
yes.
that I also am totally fine with that. I am someone who has watched supercuts of Sense8 orgies, okay?
Yes.
I'm on the wrong side of history. But it is this interesting thing, and you're completely right, of like, you can tell that this was a gay man who is at the helm of this, because the variety within an hour and 40 minutes between two episodes of what we're seeing, I was like, I don't know how you beat this.
Yeah, no.
But I bet you'll be beating it up.
Well, also, yeah, Jesus Christ. It's very unpretentiously just a sexy show.
Yeah.
This isn't sort of masquerading as prestige in any way. There is some, it's beautifully lit in a certain way. You might mistake that for prestigious. But otherwise, the thing I love about this show is they'll get into a sex scene between these two guys who are on opposite teams, who are equally like up and comers. Oh, God, everything is a fucking pun. And when they finally get into it, They start having sex, and then it sort of feels like it's fading to black, mm-hmm. you know, like the way what we criticize these things for. And then it just fades in on them doing another position, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and then fades in on them doing another position.
Well, like, yeah. my real concrete criticism of, like, so much of this written content about gay male lives mm-hmm. coming from heterosexual women is that it's like we're creating a situation where we're making it feel like it's unsavory for queer people to acculturate our own people. And so much of their acculturation is coming from these people who have not lived these lives. And there were so many things in the flirtation between these guys that felt real and organic. Like, we all had to have sex with people at some place of closetedness during our time. And understanding the ways that they can be direct or indirect, it felt just so real and observed. But also, I was having this sort of like vague anxiety about how come all the respectable things about gay guys are written by straight women. Mm-hmm. And then fucking Jennifer Weiner's Substack comes out today and it's like, guys, I've been thinking about this. And she has a really great, concise, basically making the argument that, like, yeah, publishing is 90% written by women.
Yeah,
so
let's start with that.
It's gonna be for women, guys. Like, if you would like books to be more for you, buy a book. But then also in a very Jennifer Weiner way, it's like, how would I feel if everything about women was written by men? How would I feel if...
Well, we did it for a long time.
Who was Jennifer Weiner?
Jennifer Weiner wrote, like, In Her Shoes. And she's a great author, but one of...
In that romance space.
But also was somebody who said, if I were a man, this would be considered literary fiction, but because I'm a woman, it's considered chick lit.
Yeah. Mm.
And she gets into some fights on socials and is one of those people, but, like, is a good thinker, and I really respect
it. It must be said also, though, that this show, in a good way, reminds me of, and I know I've used this reference recently, MTV's Undressed, where it always happens in the gay storylines in that show. If you haven't seen the show, it was like a soapy, sort of sexy show that aired after hours on MTV.
Yeah.
And in the gay storylines, there was always one guy who was like the cocky, more experienced one, and then there was the neurotic, less experienced one. And the neurotic, less experienced guy always called the other one, such a dick or such an asshole. This guy says, you're such a fucking asshole, this guy, like 2,000
times.
Well,
that's because they're bros. And that's how bros talk. Also, it's very important to recognize that this is, in theory, set in 2000. It starts in 2006.
Oh, yeah. It spans years and years. It's truly so Gone with the Wind.
It's the decade of their lives. And so they're sexting on BBM. Oh, we've been there. We've all been there. But I hear you in terms of, like, these women writing this fanciful, potent sexuality that, like, isn't based in their experience. But they're also, there's an appreciation from those women because that's their way to be able to speak like that and to, like, actually, like, engage and, like, I want sex and I want it now in a way that's accepted through, like, the ciphers of hot gay men.
The thing is I have no problem with that. My problem is feeling the need to make it sad. Like, it's, my problem is more, like, what's the book that everyone was reading with the sad man on the cover?
Honey.
The Inheritance? No. The gay one?
The gay one.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing.
The Hanya whatever.
Yes.
A Little Life?
A Little Life.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's
My problem is that, not, like, the beautiful world that Japan has been doing for decades of, I would like to talk about fucking in a way where nobody is oppressed.
Yeah.
Let's do this with two dicks. Like, that I'm excited for, and I don't think, because I'm not reading these things, I didn't realize how much it was that, and, like, this show really converted me.
As someone, and we've spent time in writers' rooms, I'm someone who is always the one doing the what percentage of each episode can be horny.
Yes.
And so they're at a good 62%
That I've never seen the percentages like I've
and
seen
I
it on
am,
this show.
I am fascinated on how they can sustain this.
Yes.
Because it's Canada, so it's going to be only 8 episodes. So we're going to get hours of this. And I'm so excited.
And also, by the way, also, this is, again, we've said this before, from a place called Canada.
Yes.
Who knew they were doing this?
I
guess they do possess hockey.
Well, they love communal spaces.
Okay, I would like to make a couple of points. The first is, the way that they are clipping through time, it's like, in 4 episodes, we're going to be in the future.
Yeah, is this Orlando by Virginia Woolf?
Yes, they're not treating it as a television show in a way that is upsetting. Like, the way that Shane is, like, constantly being like, oh, that guy's a dick. It is a very Canadian structure of Boy Scoutiness that has to be, like, a little too, like, sweet in the mouth in a way that is, like, you know, to an American is distasteful, but it's what they have to do. And also, Crave has been making good stuff. Letterkenny is a really good show. Also, kind of a horny show for a comedy. Shoresy is really good. Like, I am uncomfortable that, like, between Schitt's Creek and Kim's Convenience that they have figured out how to make a show that is as funny as a show that we make. Like, they're not.
They've been coming down here for years. They've been coming down here for years.
Stealing our technology, sitting on our writers' rooms, and then going back up north and for one third of the pay,
writing a good show.
And that's the real tea. It's like down there, you know, they have Sweet Green. Okay.
You believe Alanis Morissette was a sort of spy stealing Glenn Ballard's equipment and going back up to the Great White North?
Do you know that Jen Arden had a sitcom? Do you remember Jen Arden?
What's that song called? Satisfied? No. Yeah, is that what it's called?
I don't remember her song. I just honestly remember.
Insensitive is the name of that song.
Her Rosie appearances were some of the best Rosie appearances that anyone made.
You're saying a lot right there, because most Rosie appearances were amazing.
All these references do connect to the period piece we're talking about.
Also, by the way, it said this show starts in 2008.
Yeah.
So I have to say, I'm a fan of this moment, speaking of Saltburn, where we're nostalgic for that time a little bit.
Because at this point, it's been, so many years. It literally, 18 years.
If you made the movie Grease today, and if you did the math, that movie, or the musical came out in 1971, and that it's based in 1959. So we're basically like, that's our Grease era.
Yeah. Well, it's like, in theory, the people who are close enough to in charge at this point are looking at, like, what are the ways that, like, we built our sexuality? What are the things that, like, we really wanted to see?
Yeah.
I mean, like, when I wrote on Babysitter's Club, we were doing a scene where it's like a young girl was going to come out, and my boss wanted to, like, maybe let's write around it. I was like, no, I want to do it for the kids that, like, I didn't get to see that. I didn't get to see that as a kid. Kids do not watch this one. Don't watch the show. But it does feel a little bit like that.
The balance of wish fulfillment and acknowledging reality is always really hard. And there are ways that I felt strange about this being set in the past because, you know, we still don't have out NHL players, you know? There's a way that we can behave as though everything's perfect and fine now, and that's dangerous in its way. But I thought that this thing really did a beautiful line of both giving you real wish fulfillment. And acknowledging that these guys are in, like, I feel like when you try to pretend that, like, everything's fine for gay people now, you can be happy. That's nice, but it's, like, not acknowledging the emotional reality for everyone. Mm-hmm. That there is some game of managing the closet and managing outness that everyone has to go through as they figure out.
It must be said also that Connor Story, who plays the Russian hockey player here, Ilya.
He's Texan.
He's Texan. I haven't heard a good fake Russian accent in a while. I'm enjoying his characterization in this. It's just a believable character for me.
I am pushing aside all other work that I am doing and only focusing on getting, like, concrete details on how tall he is.
Just look for something of him in a doorway. That's what I always do.
I mean, yes, it's very important. But, like, his Wikipedia entry says, like, he trained as a gymnast, and I am like, are we under 5'9"?
They're talking 5'4".
Like, yeah. I mean, but also, if so, then they are doing good Lord of the Rings level force perspective to make him feel like the 6'3 Ilya.
You know what is the most accessible version of that of all time? Is Julia.
Of course.
Where Meryl Streep is 11'7" in the movie.
Yes.
And all the men in it are like 1'9".
They made all the tables smaller because, you know, Nora has a plan.
And it's usually table-based.
It's mostly table-based. But yeah, no, Connor Story, obviously we all did a little bit of research.
Yes.
I did gasp. Like, I do, like, I really do need to explain. I love horny shit. I've been watching it since I figured out how to get onto Showtime Anytime.
Yes.
The fact that watching this show did make me pause while putting on my Hanes this weekend speaks to, like, what we need in the space.
Yeah,
you know?
Seriously, how much gay heat have we really gotten in? Like, I remember True Blood was all the rage for that moment. Like, can you believe you saw that ass,
exactly,
et cetera. But it was never sustained in a scene like
this.
We
were all picking the butt out the salad. You know, we were all, like, trying to find the pieces of it that, like, could sustain us. So the fact that, like, these children don't have to make a supercut. They have the whole clip.
I think that's growth.
I've always maintained that as a Gen X gay man, I had to use every part of the pornographic buffalo. You know, like, a guy in a tight t-shirt comes on the Price is Right. I'm going to have to get a VHS.
Oh my God.
Wow. Really spoke hard to the Vertel experience here. Not too many hot men roaming around game shows, I have to say, as a fan of the genre.
There was one super hot guy on University Challenge.
Oh.
And I went so deep learning, like, I believe I had his home address by the time I was done.
I mean, I was watching Young and the Restless, and, like, just the music cue as someone faded off from the candlelit yacht. I don't know. That's what we had back then.
And by the way, when you're a kid, you have an extreme imagination. Oh, I remember when the Green Ranger and the Pink Ranger seemed to be headed somewhere in a multi-part episode. And at the end of it, finally, they're having a chat that looks like Melrose Place or something. And And I thought, and this is, I'm like 9 years old, and this is before I go to soccer practice.
Sure.
I am sure they are going to fuck in front of me.
It's like, it's going to happen.
Right.
That's lovely.
And, you know, they will sort of create a megazord of their own. Yeah.
The bodyguard when...
His scorpina will... Anyway, I can go deep on this.
Oh, and Kevin Costner threw the scarf up and then Whitney's sword cut it in half. Oh, my God. Bodyguard was good for me.
And, of course, the best part of Truth or Dare is when Kevin Costner tells Madonna she won't be in the bodyguard. And that's when she calls him neat and is insulted by him. Anyway, I'm so glad we got
so
into
glad
this.
We got that.
All right. Hockey, I support you. Lacrosse, are you next?
Oh, no.
Oh, famously, Canada has two official sports, official winter sport hockey, official summer sport lacrosse. I think that's the logical next step because God knows they're only going to make two seasons of this show.
So okay, only yes. Hitting and catching? I'm good with that.
All right. Jesus Christ. Who are you, Paul Lynn?
I don't know. It's right there.
Okay, we'll be right back with our newish and extremely controversial new segment. Keep It is brought to you by OneSkin. I'm touching my skin right now. Why? Not because I'm that character in Silence of the Lambs, but because of OneSkin. It makes your skin smooth and still gossamer-like. At the core is their patented OS1 peptide, the first ingredient proven to target senescent cells, the root cause of wrinkles, creppiness, and the loss of elasticity, all key signs of skin aging. And these results have now been validated in 5 different clinical studies. Certified safe for sensitive skin, OneSkin products are free from over 1,500 harsh or irritating ingredients, dermatologist tested, and have been awarded the seal of acceptance by the National Eczema Association, delivering powerful results without the side effects. All of OneSkin's products are designed to layer seamlessly and replace multiple steps in your routine, making skin health easier and smarter at every age. OneSkin also just launched their limited edition holiday sets, including the Nightly Rewind gift set, which is one of those rare gifts that's both impressive and genuinely useful, providing an upgrade to anyone's nightly routine. Featuring their best-selling face moisturizer, their new peptide lip mask, and a cooling Gua Sha tool, each component of the set is designed to work together as your body enters its natural nightly repair mode, helping renew skin at the cellular level for a stronger, smoother, and more resilient skin. For a limited time, try OneSkin for 15% off using code KEEPIT at oneskin.co/keepit. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
So instead of Keep It This Week, we're turning our rant topics over to our malevolent producers for a new segment we're calling Door Number Who. And that's a game show reference. Guy, Riri, each of us will be given a mystery pop culture topic to react to. Might be something we love, might be something we simply would rather not. We haven't seen any of these in advance, so we'll see what's behind Door Number Who. And I'm going to start with the Lewis-shaped amulet. We'll see what's haunted inside.
Mm.
Kate Beckinsale tells Jimmy Kimmel that her daughter's boyfriend two eggs. Here's what Kate Beckinsale said to my boss, Jimmy Kimmel. He went to the bathroom and then was very surprised to find that he had laid an egg. After crushing it, he found it was a hard-boiled one, too, and it kind of cooked inside him, she added. And he's allergic to tree nuts, so we've had some emergencies, but this was more intense than a tree nut emergency. Daffy. She adds, I think it's quite hard to put an egg up your bottom and then get it up without injuring the egg, she said. I think that's a skill. She showed Jimmy a photo on air and he seemed to offer no additional argument after seeing the evidence. Okay, in the writer's room on Kimmel, we rarely actually discuss like what a guest has said or whatever, because guests say crazy things all the time, whatever. We still don't understand what has happened, what Kate Beckinsale is talking about. She says that this is her, first of all, it's already Nicki Minaj's friend's cousin's balls in terms of 3 degrees of what is going on here. But she's saying this guy laid 2 eggs and that they are, I guess, looking like grocery store eggs.
Was this a story that her segment producer knew was happening?
I don't believe so. Okay. Because I don't believe he knew she was going to show him a photograph either, which, by the way, I still have not seen.
So yeah. she just showed it on the phone. It wasn't even, it's so wacky.
Yeah. She also is so wacky. Yes. And I want to say about Kate Beckinsale, I don't think I have ever underestimated a celebrity more. Because when I was in high school, she was in things like Serendipity yeah. and Pearl Harbor. And she's got that kind of
she's
like
so
very mainstream look.
Yeah. And she started out on the Dane path. She right. started yeah. out, you know, in Much Ado About Nothing. But she's gone full kook.
Well, yes. Underworld kind of like took it to the yeah.
And Underworld was coming out around that time too. But then when I saw her in that movie Love and Friendship, the Whit Stillman
yes.
movie, that is one of the most wickedly funny
yes.
movie performances I've seen in the past 15 years. She is unbelievable. She's so smart in it. And so it's based off a Jane Austen short story called Lady Susan, which yeah. was written really early in her career. And she also worked with Whit Stillman in the
Last Days of Disco.
Yeah, a fabulous performance. Chloe Sevigny also in that. And if you've ever seen her in Cold Comfort Farm in the 90s, she's just extremely talented. And so, it's not underutilized because she's in so many movies.
She works.
But she does things that people don't know she can do.
So that's all to establish that she has enough common sense that the Lord gave her.
Yes.
And she thinks her boyfriend laid an egg.
Yes, her daughter's boyfriend
her
laid an egg.
Her daughter's boyfriend. Oh, it was her daughter's boyfriend. That's fine. You don't know what's going on up there. That's not a hole for her to manage.
Yeah.
But it is fast. I love the thought process that she must have had. Be like, Jimmy will love this story. I have to tell him.
Well, by the way, the way she tells it too is like not straightforward and like, she seems kind of distracted by her own story and mm-hmm. tangent several times. So if she just said, Jimmy, I'm here and I'm going to tell you something crazy, mm-hmm. that would have been one thing. But instead, she's sort of doing that.
Yeah, she's like, factually, men can lay eggs.
But, yeah.
But like an authentic human moment happening on a talk show is such a rare thing
yeah.
now. That somebody like pushing past the segment producers
yeah.
to be like, I'm going to say something crazy.
But I need to know if she was holding it ready. Like that's the thing. Because if the photo is up, because you know she probably has a lot of pictures of like wigs and dogs or whatever.
Yes.
So if the photo was ready, that means yes. she went out in there deciding that this was something she needed to share with the world.
A covert operation. Yeah.
Exactly. Which that is the thing I find most fascinating about it. That she was like, I must hold this gem of an egg to share with everyone before I crack open and seem like I've lost my mind.
Yeah, if anybody can offer perspective on what the fuck could have been happening in this family. I'm sorry, it is on my mind and my coworkers' minds.
I've gotten some texts about this as well.
A couple of years ago, I was at Sarah Silverman's rooftop party and she was there.
I was there. Like, I met her there.
She was she's 50 years old and she's dressed glammed out ridiculously, mm-hmm. magnificently, being who she wants to be in a way that actresses aren't allowed to, in a way that was really great. But I had just seen the weird movie where Gary Oldman pretends to be a little person.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And Matthew McConaughey.
With Matthew McConaughey. Yeah. And I did not understand what had happened to that movie. And, you know, going up to an actor and talking to them about one of their movies that was a miss is not the nicest thing to do, but I had to fucking go. And I sat her down and I was basically like, what's going on there? And then in the most lucid, direct, and dishy way, she told me what had gone on with that film, which was Mr. McConaughey not playing Paul. And it was so great and really filled me with a high degree of regard for her and just sort of like a, she's doing something. Let her do it.
Someone asked Gary Oldman about that recently in the last like couple of years. And uh-huh. he was like, tuition. I had tuition. I think I had a divorce.
If Gary Oldman's going to have something, it's going to
be
a divorce.
And that's like, and I loved that sort of earnestness of like, no, I know y'all have seen the one sheet. I don't think it was a good idea also.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think we need to get some sort of proctologist to explain this whole egg situation.
Yeah, I'm worried for the rest of us. Riri,
yeah.
It's your turn.
Josh Brolin reveals past friendship with Donald Trump and says there is no greater genius in marketing than him. While promoting Dead Man, A Knives Out Mystery, Brolin mentioned there's a similarity between his character and Donald Trump. He went on to say that he was, quote, not scared of Trump because even though he says he's staying forever, it's just not going to happen. And if it does, then I'll deal with that moment. But having been a friend of Trump before he was president, I know a different guy. I wonder what it is about the Daniel Craig gay in a wig movie that he needed to share that piece of information
yeah.
in 2025.
What was the question?
Yeah, that's always the thing I find really fascinating about some junkets. And I know, we know they go on forever. And like it actually reminds me of when Liam Neeson revealed that he like hunted a man.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah.
The question wasn't there, but like wanting to add, I too know a sociopath. Again, Josh Brolin, just go to Barbara's Thanksgiving. I don't...
There seems to be a cockiness here from having played W.
Yes.
That he understands the psychology. I think it all goes back to Oliver Stone and whoever saw that movie, because it wasn't me. 2008. I was busy watching Milk.
I definitely saw it. I think it's
Tandy
also...
was doing something and I liked it.
Did she have like a brow prosthetic in that movie?
She's doing clowning.
It was really crazy. I will say that like the thing I'll take away from this... how many people have talked about the fact that Trump is a marketer?
Yeah.
Sure. Whatever he's marketing hurts my eyes. But it's the use of the word friend so many times.
Yeah.
And it's like, and maybe I'm a little more specific in who I still use that word about. But the idea of like, oh yeah, he and I were friends, as everyone in the world is trying to find distance.
And also, by the way, hasn't Trump repeatedly insulted Barbara Streisand?
Yeah.
So that's weird.
Well, you know, some people don't respect their stepmothers. And I think we should talk about that. But like, it is, there is this like, we're in an interesting space too, because like so many of these like megalomaniacal characters that we're seeing with guys being like, oh yeah, I'm doing something large like Trump, or I'm doing something in a caricature like him. It's like, okay. And I don't know if you're trying to add to the conversation. I don't know if you thought that was just like, look at me being smarter than you about this fact. But I just am going to be there for whatever spooky Glenn Close, whatever Glenn Close and I guess Kerry Washington are going to do together.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
No,
I'm excited.
I meant to go last week, but I had to shred too much cheese. But it is like, it is funny, like, to add to this discourse of like, oh, he's not going to stay. Thank you, Brolin, for letting me know that the fascism isn't going to stay forever.
Well, I went through a very similar journey when Jamie Lee Curtis told me that I should vote for Arnold Schwarzenegger for governor.
Oh,
and I was just like, I love Jamie Lee Curtis. She would never steer me wrong, but it's like she knows this person in a different way and isn't concretely thinking about the fact that he's going to veto equal marriage rights in California, you know? But the game Trump played of cultural ubiquity between 1977 and like 2004 is insane. That he was everywhere, that he knew everyone, that he did such a good job of making himself our cliche of a rich guy. It's bonkers when you just go watch a Home Alone movie or The Associate and you're like, but he has to be there.
Because he made it a clause in any sort of location rental fee for that was a Trump property that he had to have a scene. So that is how, that's smart. But most people cut it out and some people left it in. Yeah. And that's why the day after the 2016 election, I watched 2 weeks' notice and his dumb ass showed up.
Right.
And
right.
I wasn't prepared for it.
Grim reaping. Wow. Yeah. Guy, I believe it's your turn, and I hope you can handle it, whatever it is.
Rush Hour 4 is in the works at Paramount Skydance.
Oh my God, more Trump.
Trump's personal request. Brett Ratner is attached to direct. Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker are on board to star. According to Semaphore, Trump appears to want to revive the raucous comedies and action movies of the late 80s and early 90s, or late 90s. He's passionate, for instance, about the 1988 Jean-Claude Van Damme sports flick Bloodsport in addition to Rush Hour. Okay, I showed my 24-year-old niece Beverly Hills Cop over Thanksgiving, and it was just remembering how many cars we used to blow up during the course of a comedy. Very exciting.
It's pretty crazy, though, that we need, like, a fascist president to make comedies happen again.
Yes.
A specific type that's going to be so boringly racist, I think, is going to be, like, that's the funny part. Also, it's mixed in the fact that, like, the antitrust of it all, of, like, all the acquisitions of all these studios, and at the same time, Brett Ratner is producing Melania's documentary. All of it is just, like, nightmares.
If we would like interesting comedy in America, what we're going to need is just a little touch of antitrust law. Like, there just needs to be a little bit of, if there were more than 1.5 places where you could sell something. Like, at this point in time, when there are only 2 or 3 companies that are making things, they all need to make unsinkable ships. Mm-hmm. So they're all just going to make different versions of things that we have seen before. And
have heard of, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so it will be another Rush Hour where, like, you know, good buddy cop movies don't come from a remake. They come from, you know, an understanding that a 22-year-old guy from SNL and Judge Reinhold really can carry, a movie.
I forgot that we actually got 3 Rush Hours.
Yeah, I stopped after 2. I did really like Rush Hour 2. But I think I wanted to go back to how it used to be, where those people had the same agent.
Yes.
And their agent made that package. And we are then enjoyed years and years. I don't know. I think it's so funny, though, the stuff that Trump likes. I think that's also like the really interesting thing. Cause like what was he watching on the gold toilet? He was watching Rush Hour 3 and like yucking.
When is he actually watching stuff for entertainment?
That isn't about him.
Right.
Also, I just want to say, if we want quality action comedies back, the last thing we should be doing is blowing up the boats that are bringing good cocaine to this country.
Yes.
I mean, if there was anything that made both the music and the movies of the mid 1980s, it was high quality cocaine showing up directly from South America.
Sure. Right. And propelling most of the sitcoms of that time, too, I believe.
I also, this is making me realize that in the last 4 years, we've had two Bad Boys. Like, we are in, which a lot of people spoke about, in this, like, IP era, and also who, and looping into what we were just talking about, of, like, who is nostalgic for what when, there is, like, we gotta get back to 1996, apparently, according to everyone. Yeah. But those guys don't have the knees for this. Like, we are not investing in the men who are taking their magnesium supplements who can jump off the buildings.
Like, the unsinkable ship problem, I think, is very real in both movies and television, in that they are putting all of their money onto these people who they think have already proven themselves. Yeah. And those people already have 4 homes, and they're not going to work real hard to write some good jokes. Mm-hmm. And that's what's frustrating to me, is that the people with the drive and energy to do this are not getting the resources to do it. And also, remember, Entourage was just a very specific moment.
Yeah.
And
just
that we used to romanticize Brett Ratner throwing women off of, roofs into pools and stuff like that. And it was funny.
It's like, she's fine. Yes. Oh, no, she had a concussion.
I just don't know that we need a return to Brett Ratner at this moment in time.
Right. It's making me shriek, and not shrieky. Emmanuel Shrieky. That's all we have for this episode.
Fun.
Oh, my God. And that was Door Number Who. Let us know what you think in the comments. And if you have a pop culture topic you want to spring on me and my guest co-hosts in a future episode, let us know at Keep It Show on Instagram and TikTok, and Keep It on YouTube. Thank you, Riri, for once again joining us.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Where can we find you on social media?
You can find me at Ri Squared. It'll be a lot of me watching Heated Rivalry.
And Ri is R-H-E-E-Q.
E-Q. Yeah, yes. That's silent Q. Don't drag me for it in the comments like you did last time.
Oh, okay. And Guy Branum, where can we find you?
I'm at Guy Branum across all social media, except for TikTok, where I am Guy Branum Comedy. But also, Louis Vertel. I am taking my solo show, Be Fruitful, on the road. First stop on the road is Silver Lake. December 14th, I will be at the Lyric Hyperion. But then December 17th, I'm going to be in Philadelphia at Philly Mocha. Mm. December 18th, I'm going to be at Union Stage in D.C. And then on the 19th, I'm going to be at Union Hall in Brooklyn. A second show is just added because we sold out the first show.
Come on, Union.
Brooklyn is excited for me.
Except here's my question. Do you know who my favorite native Philadelphian is?
Oh, Christine Baranski?
The correct answer was Grace Kelly.
Oh, we have the same birthday.
Oh, really?
Guy's answer was the correct answer.
Yeah, I enjoy her too. You know whose hero is Christine Baranski? Cynthia Nixon. Look it up. That's our show. We'll be back next week with more Keep It. See you then. Don't forget to follow Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. You can also subscribe to Keep It on YouTube for access to full episodes and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our producer is Bill McGrath. Our associate producer is Kennedy Hill. And our executive producers are Louis Fertel, Ira Madison III, and Kendra James. Our digital team is Delon Villanueva, Claudia Shang, and Rachel Gajewski. This episode was recorded and mixed by Jarek Centeno. Thank you to David Tolles, Kyle Seglin, and Charlotte Landis for production support every week. Our head of production is Matt DeGroot. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.